This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of September 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of September, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
And John Parvin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Just before we read the headlines, could I ask if you have any of our wallets waiting to be returned, that you put them in the post as soon as possible, as some may still have our old address on, and we're keen to update all the address labels with our current address in Winnell Valley Road so that we don't lose the wallets and to ensure that you still receive our recordings. Secondly, if you know of anyone who'd like to assist us with our memory stick copying for a short time on a Friday morning, or to assist with administering the return of the wallets on a Wednesday, please ask them to drop us an email. The email address is info@winchestertalkingnews.com. Now, the main headlines this week: police standoff at flat, cleric wholeheartedly apologises to busker, and leaked information raises questions over new hospital. So, Norma, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Police standoff at flat. A man has appeared in court for allegedly threatening police with an imitation firearm during a 32-hour standoff at a Winchester flat. Officers had initially been called to a public order incident at Mountbatten Court in Wick at 2:45 p.m. on Wednesday, August the 25th, and on arrival, threats were said to have been made to officers with a weapon. Police negotiated with a man who had barricaded himself inside, but forced entry around 10 p.m. on Thursday. A 60-year-old man has since been charged with possession of an imitation firearm with intent to cause fear of violence. Richard Peter Kempson of Mountbatten Court, Andover Road, Winchester, appeared at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on Saturday. He will next appear at Winchester Crown Court on September the 29th. The Magistrates Court heard that Kempson, an allegedly armed himself with a Gammo P800.177 air pistol with intent to cause PC Cross and PC Lark to believe that unlawful violence would be used against them or another. Kempson was remanded in custody following the hearing. The air weapon was seized during the arrest, although a police spokesman said it was not a viable weapon. During the standoff, dozens of police vehicles were on the scene with armed police and dog units present for a number of hours. As the incident unfolded, a police spokesman said, "Officers are currently on scene dealing with an ongoing incident at an address in Mountbatten Court, Andover Road. We were called to reports of a public order incident. On arrival, threats were made to an officer with a weapon. Officers are now involved in negotiation and remain at the scene as efforts continue to resolve the situation safely. A containment is in place at the address. We wanted to reassure the public that this time there is not deemed to be any wider risk to the community and thank them for their patience as we deal with this incident. Neighbours were unable to return to their homes after police cordoned off the street and others were told to remain inside. One woman who lives nearby said that she was not able to enter her home as it was not believed to be safe. Hours after police arrived, some neighbours living in Mountbatten Court were able to return home while others were taken to a communal room. Following Kempson's arrest, a police spokesman said, "We wanted to thank the community for their patience as we dealt with this incident. Mountbatten Court is a development for the over-50s and is run by Housing 21, a national housing association that provides homes nationwide for the elderly and those in need of extra care. A spokesman for Housing 21 told the Chronicle, "We can confirm that the incident involving the resident took place at Mountbatten Court. The safety and well-being of our residents and colleagues is our priority, and they are being supported. All residents and colleagues are safe and well."
Cleric wholeheartedly apologises to Busker. The clash between a well-known Winchester busker and a senior churchman has been settled. As previously reported, Marvin B. Naylor was playing guitar on the square when he was approached by the cleric, who has not been identified. But following a meeting with the cathedral clergyman and the dean, the musician hopes to draw a line under this incident. The clergyman has apologised wholeheartedly for the upset caused, and I've accepted his apology, Mr. Naylor told the Chronicle. I informed them that I had an issue with the cathedral statement, in which the clergyman stated that he only asked me to move aside and not to leave, and that I had written another letter to the Chronicle again, stating that I was in fact asked to leave. I said it was my right to reply, to put the record straight. Anyway, the clergyman, the dean, and myself are now hoping to draw a line under this incident. Over the last decade, Mr. Naylor of Greenhill Road, Fulford, has become a familiar figure on city streets with a wide repertoire that includes his trademark theme from The Third Man. He said he had never been moved on by the police. When the incident occurred in mid-August, Mr. Naylor said in a letter, "Without an excuse me, or even waiting until I'd finished the piece I was playing, you became aggressive and intimidating, saying I was on church property and that I was obstructing the entrance to the cathedral grounds." The story split readers, with online user Kim A. Gottlieb, the former city councillor, commenting, "He is the best street entertainer in the city, never mind the square. He should play the Albert Hall." User Ruffalo showed empathy towards the cleric. "The priest asked or telling him to move on isn't about the faith. The busker is blocking a driveway. People live there, and nobody knows why he asked them to move. He may have been a pastoring, a parishioner, a grieving family member, or even been up all night attending last rites. Or he may be fed up with the noise. It's his right to ask somebody to move away from his property."
Leaked information raises questions over new hospital. Information leaked on the government's new hospital programme has raised questions as to whether Central Hampshire will be given a new hospital building. The communications playbook for the government's new hospital programme orders hospital trusts to describe newly built units and major refurbishments of existing NHS buildings as new hospitals. The document leaked to the Health Service Journal, titled New Hospital Programme Communications Playbook, sent to NHS trusts this month, said, "The schemes named in the announcement are not all identical and vary across a number of factors. However, they do all satisfy the criteria we set of what a new hospital is, and so must always be referred to as a new hospital." The document stated that a definition of a new hospital could include a major new clinical building on an existing site or a new wing of an existing hospital, provided it contains a whole clinical service, such as maternity or children's services, or a major refurbishment and alteration, but building frame or main structure, delivering significant extension to useful life, which includes major or visible changes to the external structure. It's raised questions over how many of the 48 projects, including that for Central Hampshire incorporating Winchester, will be completely new hospitals rather than rebuilds or the construction of new departments on existing sites. This is particularly relevant for Basingstoke because one of the two shortlisted locations for a new hospital is the current site of Basingstoke Hospital in Aldermaston Road. The other location is land near to Junction 7 of the M3. This is important for Winchester, as the future of services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital will be affected by any new hospital built in or near Basingstoke. The Conservative Party is committed to building 40 new hospitals as part of its manifesto in the 2019 general election. According to the Health Service Journal, the leaked document states that all press announcements on the new hospital build programme must receive clearance from the Department of Health and Social Care. NHS England is also insisting on signing off media responses from NHS trusts to journalists, a controversial policy which was introduced during the pandemic. A Department of Health spokesperson told the Health Services Journal, "We have committed to build 40 hospitals by 2030, backed by an initial £3.7 billion. Each of the hospital building projects will be new hospitals delivering brand new state-of-the-art facilities to ensure world-class provision of healthcare for NHS patients and staff by replacing outdated infrastructure. It is not uncommon for existing hospital sites to accommodate multiple hospitals, and there are numerous hospitals which specialise in one area of care or are co-located. They are all nonetheless hospitals. In some cases, that will be whole new hospitals on a new site, and in other cases, a new hospital on an existing site with dedicated facilities for particular conditions such as cancer. We have issued guidance to trusts in the programme to support communications around the plans for their schemes, which is standard practice." Hampshire Hospitals has declined to comment on the document. And that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, and then Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Boyles, David Ronald Boyles, who died peacefully on the 22nd of August at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Davidovits, Robert Hyman Colin Davidovits, Honorary Alderman of Hampshire County Council and Eastleigh Borough Council, who died peacefully at home with his family, aged 91. Ford, Jill Rosemary Ford, died peacefully after a short illness, aged 89. Stacey, Ronald Stacey, died peacefully in his sleep on the 21st of August, aged 104. Sullivan, Irene Jones Sullivan, died on the 12th of August. Tatham, Noreen Sheila Tatham, died peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 92. Thorne, Marjorie Betty Thorne, died on the 13th of April, aged 95. And Weller, Brian Weller, died peacefully on the 6th of August, aged 74. Now, Norman, may we have a Christian comment, please?
And this is entitled Love and Care to the Very End. Excuse me. In the last few weeks, I watched a loved one, a very old loved one, become rapidly ill and die. I was there at the last breath. She was fiercely independent, but eventually realised that she was going to need a lot of looking after, and submitted herself to the wonderful and caring hands of a hospice for the last 3 weeks of her life. I thought I knew a lot about health care after a career in the service, but I had not seen the hospice care before. The modern movement was founded by Dame Cecily Saunders in 1967, but goes back much further than that, to the times when people knew that dying was an inevitability and that to not find a cure was not a failing. Keeping vigil in turn with my family at the hospice, we saw love, care, understanding, acceptance, and the most gentle care up until the last hours and minutes. I met staff who talked about their calling, some long in the service for the dying and some new, all happy and fulfilled in their vocation. There was humour, laughter, conversation and sharing of life stories in this serene and calm environment. "We are lucky to have her," said the nurses. It took me a while to realise that they were used to listening to their patients' needs, spoken and unspoken, and allowing them and their bodies to take their natural course. I was concerned about fluid intake at one stage, but it was explained to me that whilst patients were encouraged to eat and drink, they were never forced. That's when the light dawned. I saw that this was a natural process taking place which the staff understood. They also knew that their job was to support, keep pain and discomfort away, to talk, to listen to their wards and their families. The Gospels are full of the healing miracles of Jesus, and there are some Christian traditions which regard an apparent lack of miracle as a failing either of the person or those who are praying. However, along with many others, I know that death is not a failing. It is a beginning, and in many cases, including this one, a natural and inevitable part of life. It is inevitable for all of us, and the gift of people who put themselves in the service is a wonderful gift in our society. It and the peaceful and pain-free death of a person is also a miracle. When she died and that last breath was taken, I felt an element of surprise in the room, not just in me, but in her too, perhaps because she saw what is written in the psalm she had chosen for her funeral. Say Yehovah is good. His love is everlasting. His faithfulness endures from age to age. That was taken from Psalm 100. Amen. And again we say, Amen. And that was written by Liz Tatham.
Thank you, Norman. Now we move on to letters to the editor. John, I think you've got the first one.
City flooding. Sir, it has become evident that Winchester High Street, especially the lower part, will flood annually. Years ago, when I was a city councillor, I gave a report that all the drains from the lower High Street up through the market area were blocked with debris. I noticed many times when it rained that it was not escaping into these drains, but what was happening was that the smell was evaporating. I would have thought that was a health hazard. That being said, when I have reported the drains being blocked, not only in the lower part of the High Street, but also where flooding is occurring in Fromond Road Week, I was told that a lot of the drains had collapsed and they actually needed an awful lot of money spending on them to bring them up to date and to do the job. I would suggest that it is a bit of a cop-out. The council has not cleared the drains in the way that is required, especially in the city streets of Winchester. I would think on inspection that some of these drains are from the late Victorian times and have also collapsed. Therefore, flooding is inevitable. We have rivers that run under the High Street. We have torrential rains now more than in the past. You have to do the basic work to eliminate central flooding. Hampshire County Council should be working flat out to get these drains cleaned and mended if that is required. Otherwise, businesses are going to suffer every year. If you think about it, with COVID and the pressures that have been put on local businesses, it is absolutely unfair when flooding should be avoided. Let's not forget, we are putting more concrete down and new developments everywhere, which doesn't help the flooding situation, but then that's another story completely. And this was from Eileen Berry of Priorsdene Road, Harestock, Winchester.
This letter from Roger Farrell is headed Hidden Gem Near the City Centre. And there's a lovely picture of West Hill Cemetery overlooking the city up on the hill. Sir, I made a lovely discovery this morning. I've known it was there for 50 years, but never found the time to explore it. Some of you will know it well, but now I've found it, I'm almost reluctant to share in case too many people overrun it. It gives you a chalk downland meadow with a generous range of native flowers and grasses, which are only cut twice a year. Consequently, the range of butterflies and other insects is the best I've seen around Winchester. To complement this, there are plenty of trees and bushes which encourage rich bird life. Despite its location within a few minutes of the city centre, it gives tranquillity and a fine view of the hills if you fancy a period of contemplation from a memorial bench. The bonus is a succession of clues to 200 years of military history and family life contained on hundreds of memorials scattered amongst the undergrowth. My favourite is a human-sized angel remembering a child who lived for less than 3 months in 1888. And if you've not guessed, the answer is West Hill Cemetery. It's a hidden gem, and that's from Roger Farrell, Burriton Road, Hestock.
Top manufacturers. Sir, I like coming back to Winchester and picking up the Chronicle. I'm presuming Jock MacDonald, who wrote the letter in the paper Chronicle August 19th, is from memory the Jock MacDonald of Liberal and Winchester Action on Climate Change fame. Much of what he says has weight, but a comment caught my attention. The UK no longer has manufacturing capability to speak of. The UK has a manufacturing capability that is world class, actually. We no longer bash metal as we did from 1750 to, what, 1980. Leave that to the Chinese peasants with time on their hands. But this country produces a vast amount of high-quality niche products that employ millions. We make planes, cars, chemicals, biotech, pharmaceuticals, bikes, wind turbines, boats, glass, fashion, shoes. I could go on. And that was from Paul Rogers, Hazelmill Road, Liphook.
Poor decision. Sir, Mrs. Sims has written about the heartbreaking decision of the South Downs National Park Authority Planning Committee to authorise further expansion and development on the Limmers site in Stakes Lane, Upham. That's from the Chronicle letters, August the 12th. Access to the site is clearly marked as unsuitable for HGVs, yet the Park Committee chose to overrule the signs erected by Hampshire County Council. My own councillor cannot explain why one elected authority decision can be altered by the National Park Authority that itself is appointed, not elected. As it stands, HGVs now back onto the B2177, having, in many cases, made long-distance journey from Eastern Europe. It is not their fault. The B2177 has no speed restriction and is a recipe for a very serious accident. Somehow, the access from the main road into Stakes Lane was not featured in the official brief. We have a film of a 40-foot HGV backing onto the B2177 on August the 20th at about 3 p.m. Urged by my councillor to listen, I found the YouTube recording of the committee meeting illuminative, although perhaps less so for the committee members at the end of a long day. The councillor representing the Worthies correctly asked the applicant's agent whether it was intended HGVs would use the site. The reply, and I quote, "As it stands, no HGVs have used the site and there is no proposal in the future." This statement was accepted at face value, and the officials did not correct it when given the opportunity to do so. Consequently, a decision was made on a false statement, and we, the locals, have no recourse other than expensive legal proceedings. This is not democracy, and not right either. Perhaps someone on the council can help me? Mrs. Armitage, Lake Road, Curdridge.
Now, this letter is headed Rushed Crime Bill, and it's from Richard Kirker. So not many people are talking about the government's police, crime, sentencing and courts bill. But if it passes Parliament, it will have an impact on all our lives, like it or not. The bill gives unprecedented powers to the police to ban peaceful demonstrations outright and to ban noisy protests. The definition of a noisy protest includes a protest involving noise made by just one person. The Police Federation was not consulted on this huge extension of police powers, and furthermore, a respected group of former police officers has expressed grave concerns. In a letter to the Home Secretary, they said, "Echoing the concerns voiced by the National Police Chiefs Council and other professional bodies, we believe this bill has dangerous and harmful implications for the ability of police officers to enforce the law, and for the health of our democracy as a whole. Peter Fahey, former Chief Constable of Manchester, described the proposals as being rushed, required more clarity, and were unnecessary. If the next time a group of residents, or even a single resident, wants to protest against a housing development or a council decision, the police could just say no. You might expect this from authoritarian, freedom-despising regimes, for instance the Chinese government in Hong Kong, but we shouldn't put up with it in the UK. If any other of your readers are worried at the prospect of their right to protest being curtailed, I would encourage them to write to their MP and ask them to oppose this repressive legislation. Or they could support organisations like Unlock Democracy, Liberty and others which are campaigning against this bill. And that letter's from Richard Kirker, St Thomas Street, Winchester.
And this one's entitled Nigel and the RNLI. Sir, I was disappointed to hear that Nigel Farage accused the Royal National Lifeboat Institution providing a taxi service for illegal immigrants. The RNLI, without prejudice, saves human souls from the ravages of the cruel sea, be they unlucky mariners, foolhardy dilettantes, or desperate refugees. The courage born of compassion, which drives the selfish action of the RNLI volunteers, say more about the brave spirit of our proud seafaring nation than do the puerile xenophobic bleatings uttered through a threadbare mask of patriotism by Mr. Farage or any other sad old geezer one may have the misfortune to encounter in a pub. Were Mr. Farage, God forbid, ever take an ill-judged long walk on a short pier after one too many pints on a stormy night, I am sure the RNLI would do its utmost to pluck him from the briny without fear or favour. By the way, if Mr. Farage knows of any taxi service for cash-strapped landlubbers which operates entirely on voluntary donations, I would be grateful if he would let me have its contact details. And that was from Frank Williams, Old Morstead Road, Bar End, Winchester.
Jab or the sack? Sir, I note that care home workers are to be vaccinated or sacked. Vaccination has the effect of reducing the severity of COVID, while the care worker may still get COVID and transmit it. Care home residents will themselves have been vaccinated. What is the aim of this crude bullying? A care home trustee, Barbara Korzanowski, writing in a national newspaper, notes that most of her care home staff acquired direct protection through having suffered from COVID. The French COVID passport requires any of the vaccination evidence of COVID recovery or a negative COVID test. Does the House of Commons have a justification for their vaccinate or sack decision? And this from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
That concludes the letters, and now we have editorial comment from the Chronicle. It says, answers needed on future of healthcare. Uncertainty had already surrounded the future of healthcare in Winchester, with some services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital destined to be moved to Basingstoke. But now the future has been shrouded in a thicker fog, thanks to a leaked government information, which suggests a new building could no longer be in the picture. Some of the city's services could well be moved to Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, with perhaps a new wing added to accommodate these. Why should patients in Winchester and the surrounding areas have to travel so far to this facility? The public transport links to Basingstoke are not the strongest, and the train station is 1.5 miles away from the hospital. Some would argue it's unfair that residents in a city of more than 45,000 people could be expected to travel to Basingstoke, Portsmouth or Southampton when there is an accessible hospital right not far from their homes. Thank you, Norma. You've now got first person, I think.
Yes, solving problems. While trying to prepare my column for this week's paper, my mind has wandered, to use a cliche, far and wide. It's up to me to make the choice of subject, and then it's over to you. I am not sure what percentage of readers is required to satisfy the Chronicle's editorial hierarchy, but knowing the standards set by their predecessors so many, many years ago, I'm sure the level will be high. When I first joined the Hampshire Chronicle in 1950, Winchester looked more or less the same as it does now, with one or two obvious differences. Traffic was two-way up and down the High Street, which sometimes caused an almighty traffic jam. The solution to this problem is really very simple. Knock down bits of the place and start again. But like so many possible solutions to so many of life's problems, that is simply nonsensical. So we're stuck here, where we are, or if you are sitting in a car, you are in an almighty traffic jam. There is simply no way out of this except, of course, the blindingly obvious. You'll simply have to get used to walking or using public transport. If that too becomes impossible, then we will all have to get accustomed to walking and walking. In consequence, we'll get fitter and fitter, and that is what's better with that. So while I pose a problem, I offer a solution and ask what could possibly be wrong with that. One way of looking at life, I suppose, is to accept that we will have to make a series of choices that may well come quick and fast. Sometimes we'll be looking to choose between two equally favourable prospects. Do we turn left or do we turn right? And if we go right, that's good. If we are wrong, there will be consequences. Almost certainly unfavourable. Now, I do not suppose that any of this will be of much help to those having to make decisions that create the difference to a day or maybe beyond that. It is only as we look back that we can gauge our success or failure rate, and by then, of course, it will be too late to change our mind. As we recall the decisions that we have made, what does a balance sheet look like? In the event we have been sensible, or do we now have a matter of regrets? It is no wonder that one of the most valuable human virtues is the ability to forgive and forget. Personally, I'm most grateful to those who, when it comes to presenting this balance sheet, as it were, do in fact forgive and forget. These are the kinds of people that I'm sure, like you, who do practice what they preach. They make life pleasurable. We look forward to spending time with them, knowing that all their dealings will be straight. I hope that in writing here like this, I am referring to your friends. I am as sure as I can be that I'm doing exactly that. And that was by Ron Allison.
I think you've got Belgarum's alternative look at the news.
I have. It says, adverts to be preserved. Fading historical adverts on a city centre home are set to be preserved by its new owner. The Nestle and Ideal ads adorn the brickwork of the house, once a shop, on the corner of North Walls and Upper Brook Street. The building has been purchased by Julia Klein, who plans to turn the house into an Airbnb. Ms. Klein was in the news recently in the campaign to repair a wonky manhole cover on North Walls that was keeping people awake. She said the painted adverts are currently looking rather sad, without love for years, but about to have a massive refresh. I'm going to seal the Nestle adverts with waterproof preserver to preserve them and focus on the historic element of the property for marketing to the Americans, etc. Nestle House. And harness the love of that folks in Winchester have for it. It is a very unique little house. There is not another one identical in the UK. There is also a painted advert nearby on Parchment Street highlighting an early 20th century car factory in Stonemasons Court.
Thank you. Now, a couple of short announcements. The first one regards a road closure, which might impact quite a few people in Winchester. because they are once again sorting out the drainage improvement works at Overton Road and Mitchell-Dever, but it's where the road goes underneath the A303, and it's going to start on Monday, September the 6th, and is expected to last 7 weeks, during which time that section of the road will be closed to traffic 24 hours a day. So there are significant lengthy diversions for that. Secondly, the Wanston Community Cafe will be restarting in September and will operate on the third Wednesday of each month. It used to operate out of the Wanston Arms and is now moved to the Victoria Hall at Sutton Scotney. It's run entirely by volunteers who provide lots of homemade cakes, and each month funds are raised for a different charity. The first one will take place on September the 15th and then October the 20th, when funds will be raised for Blood Cancer UK. There's plenty of free parking, so people are invited to come along and enjoy a tea, coffee, cake and a chat. And it runs from 9:30 a.m. to 12 noon on the third Wednesday of each month. And the last orders for the coffee and cake are at 11:45. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 3rd of September at 6:21 a.m. begins at 7:47 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 8th of September, it ends at 6:29 a.m. and begins at 7:36 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please telephone the contact number on the key fob which is attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Norma.
And this is rather interesting. Summer flyby. Bird life in local habitats is changing. As the days get shorter and colder, you might notice the bird life in our local habitats is changing. Many species are heading south now their breeding season has finished. For some, this might mean a short hop to summer climes, while for others, it is a mammoth journey halfway across the globe. While this means that the departure of some of our iconic summertime species like swifts and some warblers, the changing season also heralds the arrival of other birds that breed in the far north. Now is the perfect time for a trip to the coast or nearby wetlands to look out for waterfowl and wading birds beginning to arrive back on our shores. Some of the species moving around at this time of year can be a bit of a surprise. Many starlings fly in from further north, adding to numbers already present here throughout the spring and summer. This jump in numbers helps produce the fantastic murmuration displays as huge flocks fly as one, twisting and turning before dropping down to roost. For other species, our coastlines may just be a stopping off point. Some may stay here for the winter, while others look for warmer weather in southern Europe or Africa. Look out for turnstones, dunlin and grey plover on rocky shorelines, feeding on small invertebrates in the seaweed and amongst the pebbles. Look out for smaller birds heading south, including flycatchers, redstart, windchat and wheatear. The latter has two races which are seen in Britain. The local race will already be leaving, but Greenland wheatear will be passing through from their breeding grounds further north for another month at least. Our lakes and ponds begin to fill with ducks and geese, ready to spend autumn and winter here. Smart-looking pintails, red-headed widgeon, and striking black and white goldeneye will all be back with us soon. Numbers of tufted ducks, teal and sheldrake duck, are all swell as breeding populations are given a boost. On wetter farm fields, you might see lines of pink-footed geese grazing on the grass and winter cereals. Strong winds from the east can also bring unusual bird species that do not breed here, and only a few seen each year, such as Pallas warbler or royal tern. So why not dust off your binoculars?
Meals for Kids. Tesco customers in Hampshire taking part in a new campaign to provide meals to children living in food insecurity have enabled thousands of meals to be donated. In the past 3 weeks, the Hampshire Tesco stores have given a donation for every vegetable and piece of fruit across all its stores. This has been part of the Buy One to Help a Child scheme to provide food that Fair Share will redistribute to children's charities. Fair Share supports frontline charities and community groups working with children, from summer holiday clubs and breakfast clubs to community kitchens and groups that supply food parcels to those facing food insecurity. Fair Share Chief Executive Lindsay Boswell said, "During the summer months, many families can struggle without the safety net of free school meals. At Fair Share, we work with a network of around 10,500 charities and community groups supporting children and families across the UK. With so many more people facing tough circumstances as a result of the pandemic, this food is needed more than ever. Thank you to every single Tesco customer in Hampshire who made a purchase during this campaign. Through the simple act of buying your fruit and veg at Tesco, you're helping Fair Share."
Welcome boost for vital volunteers. A Winchester charity has been boosted by the city's car boot sale at the Cattle Market car park. Winchester and District Samaritans have thanked all the attendees of the car boot sale that took place on August the 29th. The Upper High Street based branch raised £699, a record amount, at this event for the branch. The funds will contribute to ensuring that the volunteer-run branch can continue to provide an essential service 365 days a year for people who are struggling to cope. And there's a picture of three smiling volunteers manning their stand at the Cattle Market boot sale on Sunday.
Benefit claims surge in pandemic. A decades-long fall in the proportion of people in households receiving benefits was partially reversed during the coronavirus pandemic, driven by a sharp rise in young adults needing help, research shows. The proportion of adults aged between 16 and 24 receiving benefits rose by two-thirds from 9 to 15% between February 2020 and 21, according to an analysis of the government figures by the Resolution Foundation. The share of 25 to 29-year-olds receiving welfare payments rose from 17 to 24%, while 27% of the 30 to 59 age group were claiming benefits in February 21, up from 22%. Immediately before the pandemic, 62% of the UK population lived in households that received at least one benefit, such as child benefit, state pension, tax credits, and other working age benefits. This is down from 72% in 2005, the think tank report Age Old or New Age found. This fall was driven by changes such as the removal of the child benefit from higher earners, the increase in the state pension age, and rising employment and earnings, meaning that some families were no longer eligible, it said. But the staggering surge of new claims during the pandemic has partly reversed this trend, with the Resolution Foundation estimating that 64% of people now live in households receiving benefit income. The number of families on working age income related benefits rose by 1.4 million in 12 months to 7.5 million in February 2021. The Resolution Foundation said that while the number of families receiving benefits has fallen in recent months, it is expected that the number of families in receipt of benefits will remain higher than pre-crisis levels into the next year. With record numbers of people receiving UC payments, it says that the government's decision to remove the temporary £20 a week uplift from September will have a bigger impact on families' living standards across the country than ever before. Carl Hanscom, senior economist at the Resolution Foundation, said, "The pandemic benefit surge has been driven by young people and reflects the fact that they have been by far the hardest hit by the COVID economic crisis."
Health visitors continue to press over council cuts. Hampshire health visitors are continuing to press the government over proposed cuts to the local service. Hampshire County Council proposes to cut the health visiting budget by some 12%, threatening around 40 posts around the county. It is part of reductions to several public health services, including drug treatment. A petition started in Hampshire called for the reinvestment in health visiting to protect the health and safety of babies and young children. Leslie Tarling, a Hampshire health visitor who set up the petition, told the Institute of Health Visiting, "I'd like to thank the government for their response to our petition. However, it is disappointing that the core question in our petition remains unanswered. Funding cuts have inevitable consequences. Health provision to the young will be irreparably affected. Health issues will be missed and adverse child experiences accentuated." The government said local authorities are best placed to make decisions for their communities. In a statement, it said local delivery models vary as services are tailored to meet local needs. "We do not advocate a specific health visitor staffing number or caseload. This is because it should be led by health needs of a population." The council said reduced grants from the government means that the current service is unsustainable.
Warning after online sales scams. More than 20 online scams across Hampshire have been reported in the last 2 weeks. Hampshire police are urging residents to be cautious when selling high-value electrical items online, particularly on Facebook Marketplace, following a number of reports where people pretending to be buyers have walked away with the goods after convincing the seller they've paid via bank transfer. There have been a total of 21 incidents since August the 14th. Laptops, mobile phones, tablets, games consoles, a drone and a watch are amongst the items stolen, ranging in price from £370 to £3,400. Those pretending to be buyers have answered a seller's advert quickly, and when they've turned up to collect the items, they've then convinced the buyer they've transferred the money by showing them the transfer on a banking app. When the sellers have said they can't see the money in their account, the buyers have convinced them it will appear soon and have left with the goods.
Street food business aims to open city centre eatery. A street food business is set to open a new restaurant and takeaway in Winchester, serving dishes based on ancient grains and diverse ingredients. Mars, the new delicious, which has a stall on Middlebrook Street on market days, has applied to the City Council to transform a unit on the edge of the Brooks. The eatery is planning to move into the unit currently occupied by Bally Point, which sells Bally clothing for children. The application states that the premises will be used for the sale of hot food for consumption in the premises as well as off the premises within class sui generis. A floor plan of the application indicates that there will be just 5 seats available within the restaurant, alongside a counter. If the business is given planning permission, it is expected to take on a 5-year lease from the expiry of the existing lease. And there is a picture of Mars, the new delicious. It's a picture of the unit 30 in Middlebrook Street, which is the Bally Point thing, and more eating outside.
Author looks ahead to launch. A Hampshire author and positive psychology practitioner will be introducing her new book at a Winchester bookshop. Cheryl Rickman will launch You Are Enough, Embrace Your Flaws and Be Happy Being You on Wednesday, September the 8th at 7 p.m, the evening before its official publication. The book aims to help readers cultivate an attitude of enoughness by providing practical advice to turn self-criticism into self-compassion and find a balance between self-improvement and self-acceptance. This is Cheryl's 12th book written under her own name. She also works as a ghostwriter from her cottage near Stockbridge. Her previous book, Navigating Loneliness, was published during lockdown, so the launch took place over Zoom. It's great to be able to have an in-person book launch, says Cheryl. At the launch, Cheryl will read from the book and share some thought-provoking advice about how to challenge your inner critic and explain why we tend to compare and judge ourselves and what we can do about it. The event is free, with copies of the book available to buy and have signed. Places are limited. To register, go to www.pgwells.co.uk/Cheryl Rickman book launch.
PCC sets out plan for safer streets. The newly elected Police and Crime Commissioner looks to employ 600 more officers in Hampshire. Donna Jones has unveiled her multi-year plan to strengthen policing across the county in the Isle of Wight. She commits to recruiting an extra 600 officers by 2023, hopes to improve police visibility, and wants to work harder to combat antisocial behaviour. The plan also includes measures on rural crime, unauthorised encampments, and on making better use of technology. Miss Jones said, "More police, safer streets is my draft plan to deliver for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. It does what it says on the tin and will mean a stronger and more visible police presence, able to investigate more crimes and secure more convictions. There's also important work to be done on improving working with the court system. As part of a balanced approach, I propose more provision to help keep young adults away from crime and for working with partners to help drug users who want to break their addiction." Once the plan is finalised, the Constabulary and its Chief Constable, Olivia Pinkney, will need to support its implementation. Now the Commissioner is launching a public consultation to ensure the plan reflects the wishes of taxpayers across the area. The key priorities identified in the plan are 600 more police officers, improve police visibility, bringing policing to the community, tackle antisocial behaviour, zero tolerance approach to knife crime, prevent youth offending, more customer-focused police call handling, crack down on unauthorised encampments, improve outcomes for victims, including female victims of violence, and a voice for rural communities. The document is now out to public consultation, with the public having until October the 1st to express their views. And Ms. Jones will be hosting a series of online and physical consultation events across the area, details of which are currently being finalised.
High sheriffs join challenge for hospices. Two high sheriffs are going head to head as they battle it out to raise money for the Sutton Scotney Hospice. The High Sheriffs of Wiltshire and Hampshire, Sir Charles Hobhouse Bart and Philip Sykes, are to take part in the Clarendon Way Walk to raise vital funds for Naomi House and Jack's Place. Mr. Sykes said, "I've been challenged by the High Sheriff of Wiltshire to walk the Clarendon Way from Winchester Cathedral to Salisbury Cathedral in aid of Naomi House and Jack's Place. I'm now in training for the September the 12th. The Office of High Sheriff is an independent, non-political royal appointment for a single year. The origins of the office date back to Saxon times, when the Shire Reeve was responsible to the monarch for maintaining law and order within the shire or county and for the collection and return of taxes due to the crown. Today there are 55 High Sheriffs serving the counties of England and Wales each year. Both High Sheriffs visit the hospice in their traditional regalia, known as court dress, as well as their ceremonial swords. They will be taking the Clarendon Way as part of a challenge, a historic path from Winchester Cathedral to Salisbury Cathedral. The funds raised will go towards Naomi House and Jack's Place work, so that they can continue to support the life-limited and life-threatened children and young people who use their services. There is a lovely picture of the two high sheriffs in their court dress with their swords drawn. Sir Charles has the traditional highly polished buckled shoes, but Sir Philip Sykes has his walking boots on, so he's really ready to go that extra mile.
Extravaganza of events for festival. Winchester Heritage Open Days, HODs, festival returns later this month, offering a wonderful mix of visits, tours and activities in the local area. Both in person and online, all events are free to attend, although some you do need to book in advance. This year's theme is Edible England, and there are foodie events for all ages, including allotment tours, foraging, cheese making, and tea tasting talks, a chocolate exhibition at Montezuma's, and even a fishy masterclass for youngsters run by Rick Stein Restaurant. Sponsors Winchester College, Winchester BID, and Hampshire County Council are also supporting this year's theme, with revelations of the college's school dinner history and a children's trail in Treasury, a high street Edible England trail with gnomes in Winchester, feast and famine historical tours at the Great Hall, and an online exhibition. There will also be the usual opportunity to enjoy and explore Hampshire's incredible history in architecture and heritage, thanks to history experts volunteering their time and to local museums and historic venues opening their doors for free. Winchester sees the return of family favourites such as Hyde 900's tile making workshops and the King Alfred Heritage bus trips. And elsewhere, new events can be found in Aldershot, Alsford, Basingstoke, Eastleigh, Farnborough, Gosport, Leap, Odiham, Romsey and Southampton. In fact, this year's HODs is turning out to be a bit of an extravaganza here in Hampshire. There are more than 200 events taking place across the county, taking Hampshire into the top three counties in England for the number of HODs events this year. All events, whether outdoors or indoors, will be run in line with national COVID-19 guidance, and some venues may have in place additional measures with regards to the wearing of face coverings and hand sanitising. However, if you are not quite ready to explore inside, the Winchester HODs team, with the help of students and staff from the University of Winchester and other organisations, has arranged a host of online events from specialist talks to virtual gin trails and sourdough classes. Look out for more information on listings in next week's edition, or visit the website Winchester Heritage Open Days organisation to find out more.
£3 million electricity upgrade finished. The final phase of a multi-million pound investment in Winchester's electricity infrastructure has been completed, which is expected to meet the needs of residents for years to come. In the past 2.5 years, SSEN has invested over £3.3 million on a series of upgrades to the city's network. The substantial programme of works has been carried out to accommodate the changing demands of local homes and businesses as the city itself develops, and more of those living and working in the area take up low-carbon technologies such as electric vehicles. This last stage of Winchester's infrastructure project, costing £2 million and running for 9 months, enabled the upgrade of 2.5 kilometres of underground network with new sections of modern, robust cable, replacing the existing equipment which was nearing the end of its working life. Building on SSEN's previous upgrades in Winchester, this network boost for the city's 11,000 customers allows for further commercial and residential connections while future-proofing critical infrastructure and supporting the wider decarbonising ambitions of Hampshire. Miles Crossley, the project manager, said, "I'm delighted that my team and I have completed this project. the final stage in a series of investments to boost the power supplies of this beautiful city and to help its residents and businesses to meet their net zero goals through a modern and efficient electricity network. The coronavirus pandemic delayed the start of these works as we took the decision to put customer and colleague safety first and to work to a new schedule when circumstances allowed. Our customers are at the heart of all we do, and I'd like to thank Winchester's residents and business owners for their patience and understanding while we work to build them a power supply fit for the future and all their network needs. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, added, "We're very pleased that the final phase of the Winchester Electricity Network upgrade has now been completed. This investment from Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks will improve the resilience and longevity of the network for businesses in the city centre."
Parents are concerned over vaccines for children. Parents have raised concerns at proposals to offer 12 to 15-year-olds in England a coronavirus jab, despite assurances from the Educational Secretary that consent would always be sought. Public health experts calling for the vaccine rollout to be extended to secondary school children as the more transmissible Delta variant tears through schools in Scotland. Most Scottish students return to school in the second week of August, and Deputy First Minister John Swinney warned it has driven a rise in cases in the country. Reports suggest that the NHS in England has now drawn up plans to start jabbing 12 to 15-year-olds from as early as the first week of term in September, according to The Telegraph. Although the Department of Health said that such a decision had been taken and the Joint Committee on Vaccines and Immunisations, JCVI, has yet to advise on the broadening the rollout. But parental rights organisation Us For Them, which was founded in May 2020 following the decision to close schools, said it had been flooded with calls from parents worried that they would have no say. Molly Kingsley, Us For Them co-founder, told The Telegraph, "Yes, you have to ask for parental consent, but this begs the question of what is going to happen if consent is withheld. This is a profoundly murky and it shatters any remaining trust parents have in the government. It strikes me that given the uncertainty about whether a 12-year-old is competent to consent, there are serious liability issues for schools that press ahead with this on a school premises." She added, "Medical procedures rely on informed consent. Asking children to make a decision of this magnitude is totally inappropriate." Education Secretary Gavin Williamson told ITV News on Thursday, "If JVCI do reach a decision that the children should be able to receive a vaccine, parental consent would always be asked before they receive that vaccine." A spokesperson for the Department of Health said, "No decisions have been made on vaccinating 12 to 15-year-olds, and it is inaccurate to suggest otherwise. Ministers have not yet received further advice from the JCVI on this cohort. We continue to plan for a range of scenarios to ensure that we are prepared for all eventualities."
Trust is fighting back against waiting times. The number of patients waiting for treatment at the Trust, which runs Winchester Hospital, has reached a record high, but health chiefs are working on solutions to reduce the backlog. Throughout the COVID pandemic, NHS trusts across the country have sought innovative ways to help at the ever-growing waiting lists, with video and telephone consultations and relocating various departments. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals, used private facilities such as the BMI Sarum Road Hospital in Winchester and the Hampshire Clinic in Basingstoke to allow services to continue while coronavirus patients were treated. However, huge waiting lists have built up during the pandemic. Figures from the NHS Digital have revealed that 44,096 patients were waiting for elective operations or treatment at the Trust at the end of June, up from 43,219 at the end of May. This was also 24% more than a year previous, and the highest figure for the month of June since the comparable records began in 2012. Dr. Lara Holloway, Chief Medical Officer, said, like others, we have seen an increase in the number of patients on our waiting lists as COVID-19 continues to impact how we work. And our staff are working incredibly hard to care for everyone who needs us and reduce the number of patients who are waiting for treatment. A number of steps have been put in place to increase capacity in our hospitals and allow patients to be treated safely, as quickly as possible. This includes running additional operating theatre lists, diagnostic sessions and outpatient clinics, and, where clinically appropriate, working with our partners in the independent sector for patients to be treated in local private hospitals. Alongside this, Hampshire Hospitals is continuing to invest in new equipment and training to support our staff and deliver the best possible care to our patients. In signs of progress, the number of patients listed for routine treatment at the end of June, who had waited at least 18 weeks, had fallen slightly from 13,555 at the end of May to 13,316. However, there were 1,852 patients waiting at least a year for treatment in the most recent month's data. As part of its battle to reduce waiting times, the Trust has recently announced it will expand its mental health services with new expert roles, extended services, and outreach programs. It is now also working to expand collaborative work with local mental health charities and services.
Ambulance Trust named as a finalist. The Ambulance Trust, which covers Hampshire, has been shortlisted for an award in recognition of the contribution made by the organisation and its staff to healthcare. South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust is a finalist for the NHS Trust of the Year in the awards of 2021. The award recognises trusts which are offering excellent patient-centred care built on strong engagement between clinicians within and outside of an organisation, and takes into account the effects of one of the most challenging years since the NHS was formed. Will Hancock, Chief Executive, said, "We're thrilled to be shortlisted for these distinguished national awards, particularly as the Trust of the Year encompasses all of the work we've been doing and our partnerships, including with the military and neighbouring trusts, and are so valuable to us and our patients. This recognition really does reflect the collaborative efforts and dedication of colleagues across South Central Ambulance Service and within our partner organisations. And it's a wonderful achievement for everyone involved to make the shortlist. I want to say a personal thank you to all our staff and volunteers for helping us get there."
Residents object to new housing estate. Opposition is continuing to a major housing and industrial scheme in Alresford. Taylor Wimpey is seeking detailed planning permission for 302 houses and a new industrial estate on farmland off of Sun Lane. There would be new access off the A31 bypass. The scheme, originally for 320 houses, was granted outline permission by the City Council in March 2020. It is one of the biggest single planning applications in the town's 800-year history. There have been more than 30 objections on the City Council website to details including over traffic parking, building materials and flooding. David Wright, Chairman of the Governors of Sun Hill Infant School, raised concerns about the proposed lack of parking near the school. Street parking on Sun Lane will be stopped, and the school understood 100 park and stride places would be created, but the detailed plans only have 20 near Nursery Road, sparking fears that parents will park on nearby roads such as Oak Hill. Mr. Wright has told the City Council, "We hope to make the park and stride attractive enough to encourage people away from Oak Hill." Ralph Poynter of Nursery Road wrote, "I believe the majority of concerns and objections to the development from the outset were related to the impact of traffic on residential roads. I see nothing in this plan to mitigate those concerns. To breach a bypass, primarily to allow commercial traffic to access the commercial industrial estate, is going to prove a nightmare for the residential roads and junctions which feed off the Sun Lane." Richard Reed of Windermere Gardens said a new access road should be built onto Bishop Sutton Road to ease pressure on Sun Lane. Justin French Brooks of Titchbourne has complained about the building materials. "The application stroke developer is proposing that the entire development is roofed using Redland duoplane concrete tiles. These tiles pretend to be two individual tiles, but are unconvincingly and clearly large single tiles. They are inappropriate for this development because concrete tiles have an urban aesthetic unsuited to the site that is on the edge of a Georgian country town. Paul Dix of Titchbourne Down is worried about how the development would worsen flooding. This has been a very long-standing feature of the bottom of Sun Lane. In response to the original plans in 2017, Southern Water informed the planning officer that it was unable to meet the needs of the development and that the risk of flooding in and around the local area would be increased. Has the question of capacity for dealing with surface water and also sewage disposal now been fully resolved with Southern Water? If not, then planning must be refused." And there's a number of pictures. The first at the top of the article is the artist's impression of the Sun Lane houses. And actually, to me, it just looks like more little boxes, or bigger boxes, actually. Almost a bit like children's drawings, really, with sort of a door in the middle with two windows on either side and then three above and then a couple in the roof. Yes, they put nice trees in, but trees take a long time to grow. And at the bottom, there is a picture of the protesters from the Nursery Road Residents Group in 2015, which says Save Our Street. And then another picture of the flooding in Sun Lane, Orsford, on January the 2016. And it is very, very flooded. And there's also a map, but I won't even try to describe that to you. But it looks very intensely populated, I must admit. More housing.
Clare pedals for pounds in Mammoth Cycle. There was no bus for Clare Watts when she completed her sponsored bike ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. Used to cycling to work from Alton to Brush Baby in Aylesford, Clare put in practice miles ahead of her Mammoth Cycling Challenge, which was a total of 1,001 miles, including a detour of 2 miles. She managed to raise nearly £1,000 for Bliss, her chosen charity. Her employer, Brush Baby, donated a percentage of its sales during the fundraising period. The work that Bliss completes with premature and sick babies is a cause close to Clare's heart. Both of her sons were premature and born in Australia, where she and her husband Paul were working, far away from the support of their family and friendship circle. Clare has never forgotten the professionalism and kindness shown to her when she needed it most, and is happy to pay it forward to other families who may need to avail of Bliss services in the months ahead. Similar to her trusty bike, which was the oldest bike on the trip, and yet the one which lasted the course the best, Clare was back seated at her desk the next day after she'd finished her venture. She said it was a journey of a lifetime, with some breathtaking and breathmaking scenery. "I have raised some much-needed funds and made memories and friends which will last a lifetime." Brilliant.
And on a similar pedalling theme, and for charity, Paul's Peddling Power raises funds. The director of fundraising at the county's youth hospice cycled 105 miles in a day to kickstart a new charity fundraising challenge. Paul Morgan of Naomi House and Jack's Place in Sutton Scotney completed the challenge on a static bike in front of the site. This comes as the charity launches its new fundraising challenge, Pedal for Play, which asks people to get on their bikes and cycle 105 miles to raise £105 each for the charity. Charlotte Patrick, senior events fundraiser at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "We're delighted to launch Pedal for Play, our new event for all the cycling enthusiasts in Hampshire and beyond. Every time you push those pedals, you're helping to make a difference to the children, young adults and families who use the services at Naomi House and Jack's Place. Play activities are an important part of the hospices, and by getting involved in Pedal for Play, you're making a difference to the lives of children and young adults who visit Naomi House and Jack's Place. The new scheme is running throughout August, and there's a lovely picture of the director of fundraising, Paul Morgan, on this static bike machine outside the outside Jack's Place. Obviously, he just completed it, and he's raising his hands in triumph, surrounded by people, some children, all clapping and cheering.
Food Group welcomes back face-to-face networking. County Food Group Hampshire Fair celebrated the return of its networking events by welcoming around 60 members to its first business networking event following the easing of lockdown restrictions. The networking event, the first for 17 months, was held in the gardens of the Greyhound on the Test, Stockbridge. Guests were treated to delicious canapés by Wilde's Kitchen, award-winning white wine supplied by Danebury Vineyard, and excellent apple juices from Hill Farm Juice. Members from across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight came together to take advantage of this relaxed, informal and sociable opportunity to meet face-to-face. Connections were renewed and new collaborations formed, with many positive outcomes initiated during the evening. Tracy Nash, Hampshire Fair Commercial Manager, thanked Lucy Townsend and the team at the Greyhound on the Test for hosting the event. She added, "It was so exciting to see so many of our members here and welcome you all to this wonderful location. Nothing beats being able to meet face to face to make those valuable connections and form friendships within our supportive food and drink community." Hampshire Fair Chairman Mike Wright applauded the resilience and hard work of all the members over the past 17 months, following the introduction of the first lockdown. He also complimented the Hampshire Fair team on their efforts to support members over this difficult period. Sarah Nelson of the River Test Distillers said, "It was really good to meet everyone again after so long. I always find that I come away from these meetings with something positive, whether it's a new contract, an idea, or a feeling of being energised. Thank you to all those involved in organising it." Barry Walker of Hampshire's Salami Company said, "What a joy to have a chance to meet the Hampshire Fair team again and to meet new members and old and get back to the job in hand, doing business with other Hampshire artisan producers." And there's a couple of photographs. There's a group of three gentlemen, one gentleman with his arms around the other two. And there's another picture of two very attractive young ladies with a glass of their, well, one looks like apple juice and the other, well, it could be a gin and tonic.
Annual boost for churches returns. Locals are gearing up for the annual Ride and Stride event to raise money for the upkeep of historic churches on September the 11th. Those taking part include St Matthew's Otterbourne, All Saints Compton and All Saints Hursley. Funds will go to Hampshire and the Isles Historic Churches Trust, which is part of the National Ride and Stride Trust that aims to preserve the heritage of church buildings. Since 1988, the Trust has provided grants and loans of more than £1.25 million to help repair, restore and maintain over 300 churches, chapels and meeting houses in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. This year, the three churches of the benefice are joining over 400 historic buildings in Hampshire. Anyone can register to take part and can cycle, walk, run, ride or drive, and participants can choose their own route and to visit as many of the churches as they wish. Participants should nominate their own local church when they register or donate online or on the sponsorship form available in church. Ride and Stride encourages the use of the online Virgin Money Giving as the easiest, quickest and most secure way to gather sponsors. Those interested can also collect more supporters on the sponsorship form, which can be returned to a local church if online giving is not possible. The nominated church will receive half of all money raised in sponsorship or donation. The other half is used by the Trust to make grants and loans to churches to help with the maintenance and upkeep of the buildings. Christine Tridimus is planning a long-distance organised group walk to which members of all three villages are invited to take part. The plan is to meet at St Matthew's Church, Otterbourne, at 9:30 a.m. on September the 11th and to walk to Hursley and Compton churches. The timing and route may be subject to change. Participants are encouraged to take photographs and email them to rideandstride@hihctorganisation.uk with details of who is in the photograph. And there is a lovely picture of stained glass window in St Matthew's in Otterbourne.
Dismay at bus stop relocation. Residents living in a part of Winchester have been left extremely dismayed after their bus stop was moved, leaving the area without a convenient place to catch public transport. The stop was located on Sarum Road at the corner of Romsey Road, but it's been removed without warning and relocated to outside the West Downs Centre at Winchester University. The bus stop was put in as a planning condition when the West Downs Centre was being constructed. Now residents are calling on Hampshire County Council, who deal with the installation of bus stops, to reinstate it. Anne Odling, a spokesperson for residents in the locality, said, "People around here thought it was excellent. It was opposite the one you alight from at Queen's Road. Everyone was delighted because there's no bus service in this locality. But all of a sudden, one day, without telling us, it disappeared and goes right beyond where it was and now outside the main entrance of the university." She told the Chronicle she has a friend who's suffering from cancer who cannot make it down to the university stop to go into Winchester. She said, "The only bus stop for people living in this area is at the top of Sleepers Hill, which is on woodland, no pavement to it, so no disabled person could use it. You have to slide down the bank." Mrs. Odling said that it appears to residents living in the area that the authority is prioritising students over council taxpayers. "Why aren't they looking after residents who are paying their tax?" she said. "Everything is done for the university. It's time they listen to the residents." She said, "We'd like the bus stop to be put back as an additional stop. I think to have taken it down and say nothing is totally disrespectful to this locality." Executive Member for Highways Operations, Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, said, "The bus stop has been moved back to its original location after being temporarily situated on Sarum Road while construction works on the University of Winchester site were carried out. This was a condition of the planning consent. A number of residents have told us they preferred the stop's temporary situation, and we are reviewing the matter. Any decision to permanently relocate the bus stop will be dependent on a number of factors, including obtaining a variation to the original planning consent, which we're discussing with Winchester City Council."
Clubs Medal Hall at British Masters, Winchester and District Athletics Club. Winchester and District Athletics Club was represented at the British Masters Championship, held over 3 days from Friday, August the 20th to Sunday, August the 22nd, at the Moorway Stadium in Derby. In the women's 70 to 75 age group, Moira West took gold in the 100 metres, in a championship best performance time of 16.12 and followed up with a gold in the 200 metres in 34.34. In the women's 150 metres, Jane Gandy and in the 50 to 55 age group ran from the front all the way, only to be caught in the line, but taking the silver medal in a very satisfying PB of 5.08.18. In the men's 50 to 55 age group triple jump, Dave Roberts, in strong wind and rain, won a bronze medal and his first national medal, with his son looking on. Catherine Miles, having earlier finished fifth in the 100 metres, a race stormed the end bend in a strong headwind to win her 200 metres B race and finished in 29.83, seventh overall in a hotly contested over 45 to 50 age group race. Andy Ganaway, in the men's 55 to 60 age group, ran well in the last lap, finishing in 4.54.19 to take sixth place in a very competitive 150-metre Masters Athletics for all athletes over 35 years of age. The event is contested in five-year age bands. This provides an opportunity to continue competing in the sport beyond the age of 35 for the returning athletes or those new to the sport to take up a new challenge. There are opportunities for athletes of all standards to compete at local, regional and national level, as well as the European and World Championships. And there is a picture of Moira West steaming up to the end, looking very impressive, I must say.
Big ambitions for student-led physio clinic. The Winchester University-led physiotherapy clinic is pictured here. And interestingly enough, the gentleman is obviously attending to the lady's knee. Oh dear. A student-led health clinic offering physiotherapy sessions is now open. Based at the Sport and Leisure Park in Bar End, the Winchester University Centre is set to become a leading provider of physiotherapy services in the city. Undergraduate students will be working alongside health and care professions, council-accredited practitioners during placements as part of their studies. When they book, patients can choose whether they wish to see a qualified physiotherapist or a student supervised by an attending practitioner. As an environment which supports education, our new clinic is offering a first-class physiotherapy service to local people, with patients benefiting from the expertise of practitioners at the cutting edge of teaching and research at the University of Winchester, said Sophie Gay, Head of Practice Learning in the University's Faculty of Health and Wellbeing. In addition, our physiotherapy students will gain invaluable experience of treating patients at the clinic during the practical placements, preparing them for their future careers as qualified practitioners. Clinics will often be run by students who will always be overseen by a qualified member of staff. Our aim is to make high-quality physiotherapy assessment and treatment accessible to everyone, and this is reflected in the low cost of appointments. The clinic opens its doors on September the 1st. Professor Simon Jobson, the Dean of the Faculty of Health and Wellbeing, said, "I hope that the Winchester Health Clinic will be well received in the local community. The University of Winchester has a growing reputation for teaching and research in health and well-being, and we are committed to positively influence the health and well-being of others so that individuals, communities and organisations can thrive. The Winchester Health Clinic is the embodiment of that ethos, and it is a natural progression for the university to diversify into the provision of physiotherapy treatment. Bookings can be made online at www.winchester-health.uk." And that's it.
And finally, Retail of the Year contest. We want you to nominate your favourite retailer, whether it's because of their customer service, the shopping experience or the stocks they hold. Tell us and they could be in with a chance of being awarded our Retailer of the Year. Nominations will be open until September the 30th and this new newspaper will then publish the top 20 retail stores as chosen by the Hampshire Chronicle readers along with voting coupon so they can vote for their favourite on October the 14th. To make a nomination, visit hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk/retailer. So that's hampshirechronicle.co.uk/retailer. So vote for your favourite.
Thank you. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thanks to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Norma York.
Goodbye.
And John Parvin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.